The voices you hear on this interview belong to Will King, Muhammad Yaffa, and two men who'd prefer not to be named because they already face enough persecution in their lives. My name is Miles Howe. So, is there any terrorism taught here in this mosque? Are there any terrorists here?
No, I don't think so.
Well, all I see right now, I see about 20 kids all drinking Pepsi, eating samosas. The only thing I think they're terrorizing is maybe that samosa, because I think they're eating it pretty fast.
So, when you come here, what is being taught? What is being preached? What's the message?
The problem here, I think, has happened to all faiths, is the spiritual component of the faith has been stripped away, and probably a majority or most of our thought process surround the spiritual essence. But Islam, really, that what's won the hearts of people over time, over 1,400 years, has been the spiritual component. But now, after 9/11, for instance, it's 10 years since 9/11. I work in the airline business. I drive pilots to and fro. I ask them, what do you know about Islam? They know very little about what the teachings of Islam. And I thought, well, 10 years after this, and you're working in the airline business, don't you think if truly Islam was the enemy, wouldn't these people know something about it? When people actually learn about the spiritual component about Islam, then they go, wait a second, all this talk about hatred and these ideologies, that's blown way out of proportion. A Muslim doctor saves a patient. The media doesn't come running and say, oh, a Muslim doctor saves the patient. If a Muslim spits on the street, oh, look, Muslim spit on the road. So it's just a part and parcel, I think, of our world we're living in is very, very, everything's sensationalized.
Yeah.
Everything's sensationalized.
Do you ever feel like you're portrayed as the bad guy?
It feels like it, actually, from the CBC. You know, every time anything happens, it's been attributed to Muslims. So really, it feels like we have done something wrong, whereas, you know, we haven't. It feels bad, and it kind of goes actually all the way. It's not just personal feeling, because the more you talk about Islam and Muslims in the negative light in the media, what's going to happen is that it's going to creep into employment. And that's where, you know, the real problem will start, is that, you know, anybody, for example, a Muslim man with a beard or a Muslim lady with a hijab, they will feel more isolated. So even though they might be skilled, but they will be discriminated against in terms of getting, you know, employed. What will happen is that the hiring managers will not hire them. And that is the next step, because if you keep drumming all the time negative, you know, connotations and tie them to Muslims in Canada, so that's what's going to happen. And then, you know, it's just, you know, social negative consequences that, you know, you may face, right? So,
you know, what's going on with Islam and Muslims, particularly in the media, really is just a continuation of what has happened in the past. There's always been a group of people that have been used almost like a smoke and mirror or a magic show. People or media or a government will present a certain group of people as the cause of the problems, while the real issue is deeper than that. And sometimes it comes from, you know, the bankers, whatever, the people that are actually stripping away the land, the property. We have a situation in the US where the banks got bailed out, $800 billion, but the little old lady has lost her home right now. So no, we've got to find an identifiable enemy. So the enemy has to be able to be identified visually, because you have to be able to point at them. Now it's the Muslims, Muslims' turn, because they're easily identifiable now. So they can be identified, just like what happened to the Jews in Germany, right? Identifiable enemy, that every problem in society now is being looked at, oh, it's a Jewish problem in Germany, right? We're having a bad time in our economy. So nobody wants to look at the fact that, the Federal Reserve in the United States is basically printing money, and the fractional banking system basically lends money on thin air. And this system is collapsing because it has no intrinsic value. It's not based on gold. No one wants to say, oh, there, that may be a bit of a problem. What they'll do is point the finger somewhere else, when really the problem runs deeper. We're all human beings. In fact, Islam teaches that we're all children of Adam and Eve, just like Judaism, just like Christianity. The Christians, Jews, and Muslims all got along fantastically in Jerusalem for 1,000 years. Mm. All of a sudden, somebody comes along and says, oh, you know what? You're supposed to be an enemy of that person, and that person's supposed to be an enemy of you. Oh, meanwhile, who's selling the weapons to these people? Who's making the money? Security system advisors, everybody's coming from the same place. The ones who are making money on the weapons are the ones that are making money on the security system, because fear sells money. Fear sells newspapers. Fear sells weapons. Fear sells everything that our world is looking at selling. But I think the good people in any nation, you get a good person in the U.S. just trying to feed his family. You get a good person in Pakistan just trying to feed his family. You get a good person in Iraq just trying to feed his family. Palestine, Israel, the just good, average, everyday people, all they're trying to do is feed their family. We're not going to be put into a state of fear and panic anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's what Harper's done, is trying to put us into, again, a state of fear and panic of each other. Instead of talking to our neighbors, we don't even know our neighbors' names. So a neighbor, you look at them and you're starting to look skeptical. That's what they did in Germany. They got the children actually reporting on their parents. Oh, if you see anything that looks a little weird, go and report them, you know? That's what they're doing, is creating an environment of hatred and suspicion and fear. So the ones we should be suspicious about, we're not. They just don't want us talking to each other. They don't want us to realize that we're all human beings.
Is there anything that's incompatible between Islam and the West, let's call it? I know those are big ideas, but maybe you want to talk about that?
What I would say, actually, in the Quran itself, God says that La ikraha fid din. Basically, it means that there is no compulsion in religion. So we're talking about, any individual person, for example. So even at that level, there is no, compulsion to even believe, And then once you believe, there are so many things, from the surface, it may look like, so many do's and don'ts in Islam. So that can be scary at first. But again, the person takes his or her own journey towards those to better himself or herself. So in terms of incompatibility, the way it looks like, for example, even in employment, I'll give you, because, I'm coming from HR background, so I could more talk about it, is that, yes, you can find on the surface that, where this person is going, I'm not sure, every day, two times he's taking 10 minutes break, for example, you might not know where this person is going for 20 minutes a day. Well, he or she is going to pray. So that is definitely, you can maybe get, take that as incompatible with the way of Western life. You say, okay, I don't take 10 minutes or 20 minutes from my work to go and pray. But if you ask and say, okay, what's going on? That's actually part of his or her faith they have to keep. That's one of the pillars. So once you really open the door of understanding, then you say, well, say, for example, if you're Christian, then you have Sunday off. That's why whole Sunday is off for you to worship, because that's the way the faith is. So there are many things that may look incompatible, but once you really start asking questions, get to know each other better, then you will find that, it's perfectly fine with the way we live. It's just, we may be doing different things, and they're doing different things, but it's just, end of the day, as the other brother said, we're all human beings. We have different needs, and we're just meeting our needs and worshiping, one God. So, yeah.
Now, the big fear word in the U.S. right now is Sharia, right? But nobody really knows what it means, right? Now, and to actually have a representation of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, that exists on the U.S. Supreme Court wall, I think that begs to people to actually investigate that. The fact is, Thomas Jefferson had a copy of the Quran. Many of the laws that exist in our world right now came from sources that were 1400 years ago, and looked, even Islamically, they investigated them, the Quran themselves. Mm-hmm. But we live in such a fear-mongering society now that our information is very bite-sized. So people in the past, they used to have discourses of hours and hours and hours and get into levels deeper. And I think that generally the public knows there's something going on, but it's easier just to take the bite-sized piece and says, thank you very much, I'm going to bite it. Oh, it was very good, thank you. I'm off to watch the hockey game tonight. The problem is that this is affecting, these bite-sized trivial bits of information are affecting people's lives. So when my child goes to the airport now, he has to stand in a lineup now and get screened for an hour, because we're accepting bite-sized trivial pieces of information and we're not getting into the deeper levels and understanding. Why is the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, why is he on the U.S. Supreme Court wall? You know, why did Thomas Jefferson have a Quran? Why did Mahatma Gandhi say that Islam was not spread by the sword, that that it was the life of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, that the people followed him because of the love in their hearts? We don't hear those things in the media.
Now, Muhammad, I come here as, you know, I'm a Jew.
Oh my God, we can't sit with you, can we? What are we doing talking to you? Aren't we supposed to, weren't we supposed to do something about you? Oh man, that's nonsense, right?
You don't feel compelled to, convert me or kill me or anything like that. And the Quran doesn't say that, or does it? Tell me about the Quran. You're the imam here, so maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, there is nothing that says that when you meet a Jew, kill him, or when you meet a Christian, kill him.
So that,
that will mean that if you become a Muslim and your father is a Jew or your father is a Christian, the first duty is to turn around and really stab them or do something about them. Yeah, and then we have to actually, the Jews and the Christians are calling the Quran people of the book. That's a very honorable term. People of the book, meaning they are respected for having divine books that they got their religions from. However, they have whatever changes they do to that, they were still called, the Quran challenged them, the Prophet challenged them and saying, what you are saying is not what the origin of your laws are, but still call them people of the book out of respect for them. So it is untrue. It's a big myth that you have to kill anybody at all because they are not Muslims. Now, the verse that people tend to refer to is the verse that came during the time of war, where God says, just the way that they are looking for you to kill you, all of you, also kill them wherever you find them. But again, people never complete that verse because it says if they resort or they recline to peace as well. And it also says if anyone transgresses against you, transgress against them as much as they do. But if you forgive, it's even better. So it's telling the Muslims, well, if you have been attacked, you have the right to defend yourself. But once you overcome the person, Allah, the Creator, prefers that you forgive them. So not to take your right from you, but you become closer to God if you forgive someone who is attempting to kill you. So the Quran is far from actually giving the injunction that go after people and kill them. Many of the Muslims had relatives that were not Muslims in the time of the Prophet. When they did not engage the Prophet in fighting, the Prophet never engaged them in fighting and didn't go after them just to kill them. And when Islam came to Egypt, it speared the churches. The churches are still there. Some churches are as old as or even older than the time of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be unto him. They still existed, and Islam has been there for hundreds of years. Those could have been easily broken and so on. In Palestine, when Umar actually came into it, he refused to pray in the church. And what reason he gave, he said, if I pray there and my companions pray with me, they might feel like they own it. And I don't want you to lose your church. And he had all the power at that time. And he didn't kill the one who gave him the key to the city. So that is not true. That is a myth. And I think it's perpetuated also by people who just either they hate Islam or they misunderstand it, or they have something to gain in mongering fear and keeping the war going on. But it's totally not true. In chapter 156 of the Quran, it clearly says, there shall be no compulsion in religion. And that means two things. You cannot compel somebody to come into the religion. And when somebody is in the religion, you cannot compel them to do anything. So you can't compel a woman to wear the hijab. So if there are people that say that their daughters or their wives must wear hijab, they want to fit within their cultures. They are not implementing Islam. So that is not a compulsion that somebody imposes upon someone. It's a Quranic injunction, but how you practice it or whether you practice or not, it's strictly between you and God. Now, the imam will always stand and say, listen, men, you have to dress. There is a dress code in Islam. Listen, women, there is a dress code in Islam. But there is no punishment for someone who doesn't do it. So, honor killing is not a concept in Islam. It's not a word in the Quran. It's not a teaching of the Prophet. It must be, and I don't know, it must be some people's tradition that they see if a woman does something, it brings shame to the family. So the family thing that some people in some Muslim countries have, and I don't know, maybe some non-Muslims have it in some other places, but usually the problem in our time today is when a Muslim commits crime, it becomes an Islamic crime. When somebody commits a crime, it becomes just a crime. And that's the problem. And I think it's intentional, it's design, and it's driving us and splitting us apart. It's making it difficult for Muslims to integrate. It's making it difficult for non-Muslims to understand Muslims.